Hello, Diddly Dum. This is Peter Capaldi. I play the Doctor. Diddly Dum, 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 Diddly Dum.
Hello, faithless listeners, and welcome to episode 81 of the Diddly Dum podcast, the fourth best Doctor Who podcast out there. I'm Doc.
I'm Hayden.
I'm Mark.
And where is Alan? Is he late again?
His key's missing from the hob. Is he out?
from the hob?
I don't know. The fob. Sorry, I was getting my alphabet all mixed up. I could have said something completely bad then, but anyway.
Is he always late, isn't he? Shall we... we can't start without him, but shall we... Shall we watch a bit of TV while we're waiting for him?
Okay.
Okay, let's see what's on. Wait for the valves to warm up.
Who's got the remote?
Has there been any news you've heard about in Doctor Who recently?
It's been a bit quiet, hasn't it?
No, there's nothing that much going on.
I suppose that's what you get at the end of a series. Oh, well.
Yeah. All right, it's warming up now.
Okay.
No, she's the best person for the job.
Now, Minister, if you're going to promote women just because they're the best person for the job, you will create a lot of resentment throughout the whole of the season.
Not from the women in it, anyway.
Well, that hardly matters, does it?
Hardly matters, I'm afraid.
There are so few of them.
I've tried to tell him that women are different, but he can't grasp it. They put such strains on a team. They react differently. They're so emotional, not rational like us.
Yeah. It's hopeless when you tell them off. Either they get into a frightful bait or they start blubbing.
They're not the sort who blub. They become frightfully hard and butch and not the least bit attractive. But they're full of prejudices.
Make silly generalizations.
Think in stereotypes.
But the scriptures are very clear. Proverbs warns us. Woman takes possession of a man's precious soul, while Ecclesiastes tells us, more bitter than death is woman.
You humans, all you want to do is please your women. You want them to be your friends, but we Ferengi know better. Women are the enemy, and we treat them accordingly. The key is to never let them get the upper hand.
You seem wise for a woman.
Our modern girls play as hard and with as much vitality and stamina as any man. How do they do it? Where do they find all that energy? That seemingly inexhaustible store of pep and ginger?
On who the person is, I don't think that there will be a woman prime minister in my lifetime.
When Charlie sees a lovely girl, a girl like yours or mine,
he uses a whistle, a wink, and wild roots. It gets her every time.
So remember, men, if you come to work tomorrow and your secretary refuses to do the filing, and then go home and find that your wife has refused to do the cooking, don't blame them. Remember, you gave them the vote 50 years ago.
We've got nearly 500 channels on this television, and there's never anything on. Just old repeats all the time. Let's watch the news. Put the news on.
The 13th Doctor in the long-running Doctor Who series has been announced. Jodie Whittaker will be taking on the role as the first female Doctor. And there she is. Well, let's speak to the General Secretary of the Doctor Who Appreciation Society, Alan Lear. Very good morning to you, Alan. So what's your take on this? Are you pleased?
That's not Alan, is it?
No.
I'm hugely excited, partly by my promotion to General Secretary, which I've just heard about, and partly by Jodie. I think it's a fantastic choice. I think she's an incredible actress. She's so powerful on Broadchurch. She's got such charisma. I think she's going to be sensational.
But essentially, the makers of Doctor Who, they bowed to pressure. Wouldn't it have been better if they naturally had chosen a woman years ago? 54 years Doctor Who's been around.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you can say, wouldn't that have been better? But then we'd have missed out on the Doctors we've had. You know, I wouldn't give up Peter Capaldi, I'm sorry. But
what
I don't know
Paul
if they've
McCann?
Bowed to pressure so much. Oh, no, Paul McGann. You know, you're Scouse Doctor, you can't go wrong. Tom Baker proved that. I don't know if they have bowed to pressure because they've had the Master regenerate into Missy. They've mentioned it back when Matt Smith was the Doctor, when Neil Gaiman was writing for them. It's been on the cards for a while. They've been building it up. So I don't think it's a sudden decision.
OK, and what about then, as you mentioned, Jodie Whittaker? Is she the right choice? Because you did say she did have a strong performance in Broadchurch, but it was very different. When you think of the Doctor, you think of somebody eccentric, someone over the top. Do you think she has it in her to create her own Doctor?
Well, as you say, it is a very different part in Broadchurch, but luckily for us, she's an actress, so hopefully that should work out. But I think she looks unique. She looks very much like herself, which is always vital. I think she's going to be really good.
OK, so let's turn away from the Doctor herself. Love saying that. What about the sidekick, then? Do you think the sidekick should be a fella now? Or should it be two women?
Why not both? Why not have a woman and a bloke? But let the writers decide. I'm quite happy. Whatever happens, a guy or a girl as the companion, it's going to be a different dynamic in the TARDIS. So from this point, it's hard to say what they should do. I'm just going to roll with it.
There's quite a sort of Broadchurch clique, isn't there, surrounding Doctor Who now? We know that the creator of Broadchurch is on board. David Tennant, of course, was in Broadchurch and was one of the Doctors, and now Jodie herself. Do you think they're cashing in on what was a very successful series for the BBC?
Well, Chris Chibnall had written for Doctor Who before Broadchurch, and he actually helmed Torchwood, the adult spin-off show. Olivia Colman was in Doctor Who at the start of Matt Smith. So I think Broadchurch has kind of come along side by side with Doctor Who, in all honesty, with Chris Chibnall's involvement in it. I mean, certainly having worked with Jodie on that and seen what she's capable of, I'm sure that's influenced Chris Chibnall's decision to cast her. But I don't think it's necessarily the case that there's a Broadchurch mafia taking over the BBC.
OK, all right. Well, he's off.
He's out of here.
He's gone to
I'm
the
done.
TARDIS.
Good God.
I say.
Hang on. Is that a key in the front door? Here he is.
Hello. Hello, everyone.
Where have you been, as if we didn't know?
Hi. Sorry I'm late, everyone. My keys were really hot for some reason.
I'm not going to leave that one down, am I?
Tego.
Not another one. Another Hayden fluff.
Alan, you didn't manage to get in our trademark. Every time we're interviewed on national television, we're supposed to mention something about gelling our hair.
Sorry about that. Oh. You'll notice I did manage to slip in some of my trademark sarcasm of being asked stupid questions.
A talent that's been honed on this very podcast.
I don't know how to slip in, Alan. I think it's involuntary now.
It is. Actually, it's been involuntary for years. I can't do sincere anymore. Nobody will accept the compliments off me. They assume I'm just being a bitch.
Well.
Very well done.
Thank you kindly.
How did we all hear the news?
I watched the bloody tennis.
Well, actually, you should be saying, well, I just switched on and watched Alan.
Yeah, well, exactly.
Yes, I was forced to watch the... Well, I didn't watch the tennis. I was forced to watch all him wandering through the corridors of the All England Lawn Tennis Club, being greeted by various dignitaries and thinking, when is this going to get on?
Had they chosen a football match, at least you know that it would have been, you know, about 90 minutes and what
yes,
have you. But obviously, the closed season's currently on. The problem with tennis is that it could finish at any time. You could have a player retire through injury. You could have a three-setter that thankfully this was. Or you could have a five-setter that goes on for about 6 hours. I mean, can you imagine just how that would have gone down?
I'm ashamed to say that I was punching the air with delight when Cilic was apparently injured.
You mean when the grown man was crying with about a billion people watching worldwide?
Yes, and I was singing Cilic, Don't Be a Hero.
Driving back from Lincoln with a girlfriend, and I'd asked you fine fellas to keep me updated.
Yes.
because I didn't know what time we were going to get back. We were just entering Huntingdon on the A14 when the news came through, and my phone was being used as the sat nav getting back from Sophie's hometown. And I could see your messages were coming up on Messenger. I could see other people's messages coming into me, and someone else came up, and I did actually look down at this point and said, "What do you think of that then?" And I said to Sophie, "We may have to pull over." And she said, "Oh no, we're only about an hour away now." I was like, "Can you please tell me who it is then?" So she looked up and she said, "Well, who did you think it was?" And I thought it was going to be Chris Marshall. But she looked at me and she said, "It's a female." And I went, "Okay." And she said, "It's Beth from Broadchurch." I kind of went, "What? Really?" And then she sort of flashed the phone at me. And I thought, oh, well, you know, eyes straight ahead. I didn't end up pulling over in the end, but as soon as I got back, I thought, nah, sod the bags. I'm going straight in. I'm going to read everything on Twitter and Facebook. I'm going to read what everybody thinks of this. I'm going to watch the clip. I'm going to read the interview. I'm going to do as much absorbing as I can. Yeah, that's how I found out, really.
So, Alan, how did you hear the news? I did hear, see someone on Facebook saying to you, "Oh, looks, it sounded like you had a great time on Sunday. Were you partying somewhere?"
We were. It was actually my lovely wife Erica's 40th birthday party.
Oh, happy birthday.
Oh, happy birthday. Hang on, how old?
40, yes.
Oh.
She's officially a cradle snatcher.
Dear, I've got something to resent even more than the casting of Jodie Whittaker.
So, it was out at a surprise party that I'd arranged for her. So we were, as Mark has already mentioned, we were very pleased that Federer was so successful so quickly, because it was sort of, we literally had to watch the reveal and then get out to get to the party location. So I had to drag her by the scruff of her neck, but it worked out okay. And a lovely time was had by all, I believe. So it was very pleasant. And then the downside was that Erica had a few drinks and a few drinks more, and ended up going back to the local Wetherspoons after the party. I had been booked to do a radio interview about the casting at 6:30 in the morning, so I got literally 4 hours sleep that night, and unlike Doc, it wasn't even because I was unhappy about the casting decision.
God, you know what? I remember those days when I was called to a radio interview at 6:30 in the morning. Oh, those laddie days.
Hayden, that sounds so early that I doubt you would have had time to gel your hair.
Well, yes, Alan, Did you go fully coiffed and freshly shaven, or was it a...
Luckily for me, because the party had been the evening before, the freshly shaven had already taken care of itself. But no, my hair is extremely short at the moment, because I went about 12 weeks without getting it cut, so I just had it all done in one go to make up for lost time. So I didn't have to worry too much about getting myself all tarted up. Not that I would do anyway, because as I have said many times before in the past, and I will say many times again, men don't use product in their hair. A real man starts his day with a glass of whiskey and a...
What if I combine that with Brill Cream first thing in the morning?
Oh, no.
See, for me, that's been a winning formula for many a year.
That's not Brill Cream.
There's too much "there's something about Mary" connotations here, isn't there?
I must say, I did have visions of Erica, Sophie and Mark's daughters marching down the street wearing Votes for Women sashes and brandishing gelding shears. And what was Erica's reaction?
She was absolutely infuriated, because it means she can never be the first female doctor.
And can never make you feel guilty again. Although I'm sure she'll think of
I'm sure she'll think of a way. Yes, she did kick my ass a bit on Saturday for not having arranged anything for her birthday, which was the Saturday. And then come Sunday, she had to eat vast helpings of humble pie.
So when you said that it was a surprise party, the surprise was it wasn't on her birthday.
Yes, that was it. Unfortunately, the venue wasn't available on Saturday. But we had only got back from Mallorca the day before, so I had a good excuse.
Do I catch the smell of burning martyr?
Do I detect the smell of burning martyr?
It's your anniversary.
But don't let on.
What?
I'm pretending I've forgotten. Well, I forgot last year and I got flayed alive for it, so we got some friends arriving in about 10 minutes for a surprise drinks party. Manuel's making a special paella for tonight. Got some champagne, but don't tell her I've remembered yet. Let's let her have a bit of a fume.
Wouldn't it be simpler to boil her in oil?
Yes, but not as economical.
How did Sophie react, Ed? Or did she not care?
No, she's really excited by it, actually. I mean, it's an actress that she likes. It's an actress that she's seen in many a thing, obviously Broadchurch being the big thing. You know, I first saw Jodie Whittaker in Attack the Block in 2010, I think it was. Yeah, that was the first time I ever sort of, well, I saw her in anything. And obviously Broadchurch in 2013 was, I suppose, in a sense, her big break, even though she'd been around quite a while before that.
She'd also been in a very good, well, an excellent episode of Black Mirror, in the end of the first series of Black Mirror.
Ah, right, yes, which the Daily Mail have cottoned on to today to say, new Doctor Who in sexy romp in Black Mirror.
Oh, right, okay, the entire history of you it was, yeah. But she's actually extremely good in it, and... If I remember, it's not particularly sexy because the whole point is her boyfriend's discovering her cheating on him at the time. He's watching a replay of, oh, I don't know. Oh, no, it's the one where they're watching the memory of her having sex with him. Yeah, okay. The Daily Mail's a bit weird, though, about sex, isn't it?
Yeah, they're very weird about a lot of things, unfortunately.
So the Daily Mail thinks that only men should be allowed to have sex. They haven't figured out how it works, but...
It's all that Brill cream and whiskey in the morning, Alan. That's what it is.
It is, yeah. Only men are allowed to have sex, but it can't be gay. They've not thought the logistics through of that at all. There we go.
Mark?
Yes?
Can you report any reactions from the younger female fraternity?
Polly, my 16-year-old daughter, she is very excited about the news.
Sexist!
Didn't speak to her until this morning, and she was just absolutely thrilled, really looking forward to it. I had a message from the Kellys because I asked them, I told them I wanted to know what Eve's, their 6-year-old daughter, was. This is Eve, who, if you remember rightly, I asked her a few weeks ago, what would you think if the doctor turned regenerated into a woman? And she said to me, oh, that'd be great. And I said, why? And she said, because I'm a girl, stupid.
She called you stupid.
Yeah.
It's a bit harsh, I think, but oh well.
I think she had a point. You know, she bested me in that argument, really, so I just backed down quietly and left. She was very tired, actually, the night she found out, and she didn't find out much before her bedtime and wasn't all that bothered. But apparently when she woke up in the morning, she was very enthused by the idea and was very excited about it, and is now very, very much in anticipation of the Christmas special. Although I did point out to her mum, well, you know, she's going to have to sort of sit through 50-odd minutes of two older men mucking about before they get to Jodie's. But it's nice for them to have something to look forward to on Christmas Day, frankly, so thank God for that.
And your own, I'm determined to get an answer to this question, and your own reaction, Mark?
My own reaction was, funny enough, when I was watching her walking through the woods in that clip, I convinced myself that it was a male. I was thinking those looked like a chap's boots. And then when the hand was out, I thought, I think that's a man's hand. No offence, Jodie.
I bet it was as well.
Quite possibly. And so I was still fully expecting that the hood reveal to be Chris Marshall. And at that point, I was thinking, my heart sank a bit, really. Not really because I'm particularly anti-Chris Marshall, but just because I thought, oh, well, this is a bit dull, isn't it? But then when she pulled the head back, and it was this blonde lady who I didn't recognise because I haven't seen her. I haven't seen any of the stuff she's been in before, or if I have, I've forgotten. Yeah, I was quite excited, actually. I thought, wow, they've actually gone and done it. You maniacs. Like Charlton Heston pounding on the beach. Yeah. Get your filthy paws off my doctor.
And your reaction, Hayden?
Well, an interesting one. I mean, I when I went on BBC News... in 2013, which I might have, brought up on a few occasions. I said that I was open to the idea if the actress was, you know, was essentially good enough, and that's exactly how I feel about if the Doctor was a man, which of course for the last 54 years he has been. I was quite shocked, actually, that they'd chosen to do it now. But then I started thinking deeper about it, about logistically, you know, Doctor Who's lost... 2 million viewers, hasn't it, over the last couple of seasons. It does need reinvigorating. There may have been a feeling, if it was another man again, it'd just be, oh, look, who's cast another Doctor? I was actually looking up a statistic, and unfortunately it was on the Daily Mail website, so I'm going to have to wash my fingertips with Ajax powder, I think, after this. But apparently, In the last 48 hours, the trailer has been viewed 16 million times worldwide.
Wow.
By Ian Levine.
Still in denial. Considering nothing happens in it, that's pretty good.
Absolutely. Well, I've watched it a few times now. Because of my age, I sort of fall between, you know, the classic series and the new series. So, you know, I always say that when it comes to the classics, well, when it comes to watching Doctor Who in my spare time, I'll always sort of reach for a classic story because they're a bit like a warm comfort blanket. But with the new series, and I totally understand that, yes, you know, the Doctor has always been a man. You've always had the female companion to sort of be that role model for women. That's kind of what I thought in the past. But I actually think this probably is the right time for a change and for a shake-up in that vein. Because, like I said, you know, the viewing audience has been dropping off. I don't think that the show and its format has felt particularly fresh. I think actually, unfortunately, up until this series, actually, it started sort of... I think the last series that's just finished was Capaldi's Best. But I suppose for the general viewing public, there are viewers who have been lost over the last few years. And I'm not saying that Jodie Whittaker is completely a ratings ploy. No, I mean, if she is the best actress for the role, or the best person for the role, in the sort of imagination of the showrunner at the time, then I think you've got to get behind her, whether she is a man or a woman. The only thing I worry about is the way that she's written. Because as we've seen with Moffat, his writing for female characters, you know, you've got to be a strong, independent female, and it's just comes out in sort of rather flippant jokes in the end, and it's and I'm sure Chris Chibnall will be. If they barely address the change of gender, I think that would be brilliant, because to an alien like the Doctor, you know, it would just be, oh, here's another body, let's just carry on.
If they do it like Bill's lesbianism, you know, maybe the occasional annoying little joke about it, but other than that...
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, obviously, when she meets any old companions or, you know, things like that, well, there's going to have to be a brief reference to the change of sex, isn't there?
Yeah.
The Brigadier wouldn't be able to say, oh, well, here we go again. He'd have to say, bloody hell, he's not done that before. I suppose there are two reactions, aren't really? There's the question of what's your reaction to it being a woman, and given that it's a woman, what's your reaction to the choice of actress? Mark, what think you? You think, Mark, you're like me, I'm not really familiar with her.
No, I'm not familiar with her, but I was pleased with that because I was hoping that it might be somebody that I personally wasn't expecting and didn't know a lot about, because that seemed to work quite well with... I mean, I didn't know a lot about David Tennant, I didn't know a lot about Matt Smith, and they were fine.
I've been slightly leaving Alan out of this because our jokey let's watch the television intro, we've just realised in retrospect, has just told us all Alan's answers to the questions. Unless you are lying to Sky News, Alan.
No, I mean, the only regret I have about the interview with Sky News is that although I thought it at the time, I wasn't confident enough in my own knowledge to say Broadchurch isn't even a BBC show, it was on the ITV.
That was ridiculous.
Yeah, I felt they were very hostile. I mean, they are the competition to the BBC, but I thought it was all a bit negative in all honesty.
It's not like you're interviewing a politician on should taxes be higher or lower, and you've got to take the opposing viewpoint, is it?
No, exactly. But, I mean, we have heard some stupid responses. Erica was complaining earlier about some bloke saying, oh, the Doctor shouldn't be a woman because the Doctor shouldn't be a sexual object. And her response to that is, well, what about David Tennant? What you mean is you don't think the Doctor should be a sexual object to you.
Yeah. If you say the Doctor shouldn't be a woman because the Doctor shouldn't be a sexual object, I'd agree with the second half of that. But
absolutely.
No, it's a non sequitur, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. The Doctor shouldn't be a sexual object, but actually saying that purely because he's been cast as a woman means you're only thinking about your own rather that guy is only thinking about his own rather limited perspective, isn't he? So it's a bit of a stupid argument. I'm on board with it. I think it's an opportunity to tell some very interesting stories. I did say to one of the people, because unlike Hayden, I was actually interviewed for BBC yesterday rather than 5 years ago or whenever it was. So it wasn't telly, though. It was radio. I went into the BBC Merseyside, Radio Merseyside Studios, yesterday morning and spent two hours.
Brilliant.
doing interviews with different radio stations across the country. And there was a variety of different questions, and there was some female presenters who took kind of a combative approach. They seemed to assume that I would be against it, being a Doctor Who fan and a bloke. And I think I pleasantly surprised them. I did needle one of them by suggesting it was the most significant moment in women's rights since they got the vote. She's like, oh, that's a bold claim. Yes, yes it is.
Hey, hang on. When did women get the vote? I've not heard this.
Well, if you're in New Zealand, 1879.
Do you know, this explains so much of the last 100-odd years.
Yeah, this explains Margaret Thatcher.
Well, 99. When was it? 1921?
Yes, something like that.
Yeah. Maybe slightly earlier.
Well, it was definitely post-war, wasn't it? Because it was part of the recognition of the land girl.
Oh, of course, yeah.
When was Mary Poppins set?
1910.
Yeah.
So it must have been after
It's post-war, because it was the women had all done the work of men during the war in the factories and what have, all the men were away fighting, and they wouldn't go back in their box afterwards. So it was...
But it went away. It rolled on for decades, didn't it? I think it took about 20 years, I think, for the...
The suffragettes had been going since the late Victorian era, since the late 1800s. Yeah. No, absolutely. The campaign was very long running, and Emmeline Pankhurst and Emily Jones and all that were long before. But yes, it was the recognition of the work they'd done during the First World War which tipped, I think, the national consciousness over into accepting the idea of women's suffrage. And of course, at first, they couldn't vote unless they were 30 years old, I think. And then it gradually crept down to 21, which was the male age of suffrage. And then the universal age of suffrage went down to 18, and I think it was the 60s.
In 1918, the Representation of the People Act allowed women over the age of 30 who met a property qualification to vote. This only represented 40% of the total population. The same act abolished property restrictions for men and extended the vote to all men over the age of 21. Yeah, it's just sort of a gift with one hand and take away with the other, isn't it?
Take away with the other, yeah. It will ensure they're still outvoted, yeah.
Oh, additionally, men in the armed forces could vote from the age of 19.
That's interesting. I mean, that's more knock-on effect from the First World War, isn't it? Because you've got the extreme youth of many of the people who went to fight in the First World War. And, you know, people will have been arguing if they're old enough to fight and die for the country, then they're old enough to vote, surely.
It was not until the Equal Franchise Act of 1928 that women over 21 were able to vote, and women finally achieved the same voting rights as men. In a way, I think people forget, everyone knows that women couldn't vote at all. This time. But you forget that about only just under half the male population couldn't vote either until after the First World War.
That's right. I mean, the property qualification was around for hundreds of years. You know, you had to own a house or holdings worth so much money per month, otherwise you weren't eligible to vote. So, and, you know, there is a line in some Terry Pratchett book or other where he says the principle of universal suffrage is that everybody gets a vote unless they're disqualified by reasons of being poor or mad or female. But there was the third interview I did, and I think it was a chap from a local radio station, the BBC radio station in Birmingham. And he asked me the question I was really hoping somebody was going to ask me. It was magnificent. He said to me, do you have a message for all the Doctor Who watchers who are upset that the new Doctor is going to be a woman? And I said, yes. My message to them is...
No, oh dear. It is, you know, that's the biggest shame, I think, actually, that's come out of this, that I had people on my sort of Twitter feed and Facebook feed who were just, you know, saying, oh, brilliant, oh, you know, female doctor, and then there are others saying, oh, I'm going to give next series a go, I haven't watched it in a few years, okay, that's great. And then you start scrolling down, then you see people saying, rest in peace, Doctor Who, 23rd of November 63 to 25th of... But the biggest problem I have with that is that it's not the children. Well, I don't have, you know, I'm not friends with any kids apart from my sister, who's 11 years younger than me, but she was sharing what her sort of age group was saying. They're all going, oh, fabulous, you know, brilliant, this is a really good thing. What I was really disappointed about was that the people who were coming out with the vitriol and the, you know, the real... Just people who should know better and should think before they type.
Ian Levine.
Well, yeah, well, old, essentially older blokes. You know, people in their 40s, 50s, 60s who are far too clever and far too rational most of the time thinking people to think The best thing to do will be to go onto social media where everyone can see it, whether they be Doctor Who friends of mine or just normal friends of mine, and just see what a complete and utter tossbot I can be.
I noticed, actually, on a lot of the negative stuff, that I didn't see much on my actual Twitter feed, because I generally tend to follow quite a lot of nice people.
You don't follow me, Mark. What are you trying to say, eh? What are you trying to say?
On various Facebook groups, in the comments under the announcements, there was quite a lot of vitriol. I noticed, actually, probably at least half of it was coming from women, which puzzled me for a while. And I thought, also, it occurred to me that, for me personally, as a young lad who had something of a crush on Romana, even to this day, if she was to if she was to change into a man, "Hello, I'm Romana. How's it going, pet?" I'd be heartbroken, in a way. I mean, I wouldn't be angry, but I would be. I'd feel quite sad, really. And I wonder if, for a lot of these women, it's like losing a. It sounds patronising if I say it's like losing a boyfriend, but it's like, you know, it's that sort of. Or fantasy male crush object. I wonder if that's part of the problem.
Potentially, but it's when I look at... I was just going to say, it's when I look at people like Ian Levine, who I know has a reputation, not just within Doctor Who fandom, but in life in general, as being quite a tricky character. But you read what he says, and do you know what the first thing in my head was? It's just a whole... You're going to have to bleep this, but I'll off.
Yeah. I do wonder. I've got quite a lot of time for Ian Levine, mainly because people I dislike most seem to dislike him the most. But I do wonder if he sometimes thinks, well, it's my role. It's going to be expected of me. I've got to say something outrageous.
Katie Hopkins syndrome. It doesn't matter what I say as long as it's controversial.
Yeah.
Talking of voting, by the way, up until 1950, if you had a university degree, you could vote in both the constituency your university was in and the constituency where you lived.
Oh.
If you're a property owner, you could vote in the constituency where your property was and the constituency where you lived. So if you owned two houses and had a degree...
You could vote in three places.
Yeah, you had three votes.
Just going back... So, you know, just sort of the social media side of things. I can totally understand why people would be upset. You know, one of the biggest reservations I've had about the Doctor changing sex is the fact that, you know, when it came to my sort of childhood heroes growing up, the Doctor was the only one who never grabbed a gun and shot people and killed people or regularly got into fistfights. He wasn't like Captain Kirk or James Bond or, you know, anyone like that. He was somebody who... talked his way out of a situation or thought his way out of a situation. I always found that quite admirable. So where it came to actual male role models sort of on TV for me growing up, you know, the Doctor was obviously a very important figure. So I can totally understand why people would be upset, but this isn't going to be forever. This doesn't now mean that Doctor Who, the Doctor is always going to be a woman.
Well, do we think it's going to start... alternating, or do we think it's going to eventually revert to being a man for quite a while and then...
No, I think it will keep chopping changing, I think, now.
Just going to say, in addition to what you were saying, the 13th Doctor in no way invalidates the previous 12 either.
No, so
those existing role models are still there as well. Sorry, that was all I wanted
Although, admittedly, a young child, a young boy, watching Doctor Who for the first time won't be aware of all those previous Doctors, will he?
No, but they will be there to discover, won't they? You know, it's.
So we've covered everyone's reaction to the casting now, haven't we?
Sure, actually.
Yes, of course.
What did you think about it, Doc?
Well, those who have been with us a while will know my attitude towards the idea of casting a woman as the Doctor. I sat through the tennis, and when I saw that figure in a cloak and a hood, wandering through a wood, I had two immediate reactions. Firstly, I thought, oh my God, the BBC have started taking commercials. And secondly, I thought, I didn't know Scottish Widows were still running. I had a bit of a... How do I describe this? It almost left me with a slightly dull, empty feeling, really. As if I thought, Doctor Who's finally been taken over by people who are easily bored. And so I didn't feel happy about it. I wasn't devastated. I thought, oh dear. But possibly even worse was the expectation of... I'm honestly, immediate reaction was, oh, I'm just going to stay away from social media for a while.
Good idea.
I thought it'll be full of either people outraged or people gloating or people outraged at the reaction of other people. I thought, oh, I just don't want much to do with it, really. And then I thought, oh, the next thing that's going to happen is that one by one, all the former doctors and former companions will take to Twitter or Facebook to say what a wonderful idea they thought it was and how they thought she's the best possible casting for it. As if any of them were saying anything different.
Can I point out that at this stage, as far as I'm aware, Sylvester McCoy, Colin Baker and Peter Capaldi have come out in favour. Peter Davison has come out against, and Jeanette Fielding has called him a pillock, and Jeanette Fielding is quite right.
Yeah, I'd seen Peter Davison saying, can't sort of, you know, have a bit of thought for people who've got to struggle to accept this. I thought, oh, that's unusual for him. That's interesting, that. I did notice that Colin Baker, never one to miss a chance for a whinge, tweeted that he couldn't understand the approach of the I'll never watch the show again brigade. And I'm ashamed to say that I allowed my fellow diddly dummers to dissuade me from replying to him on Twitter. Yes, it's almost on a par with saying I'll never give an interview to that magazine again, isn't it?
At the end of the day, I mean, even though they're not still involved with the show per se, apart from obviously the occasional Big Finish recording, they're still sort of ambassadors for the programme, aren't they?
But that's the point, though. Peter Davis is the only one who does what I would call evidence against interest. There's no way you can say, oh, he would say that, wouldn't he? Because it's his bread and butter. The rest you could say that about. Unless they're just being... It's equally, they could be. They're just being polite. You know, it's there's no point pissing on someone else's doorstep, if you'll excuse the expression. When I did go on social media, I thought, it seems to be full of people outraged at the vile misogyny of some reactions, of which I've seen nothing. And admittedly, I've not been on the forums. Maybe this just demonstrates that you need to sort out the sort of people you follow, because no one I follow has said anything vile. None of the threads that they have posted on Facebook or whatever have had anyone commenting on them saying anything really awful. Mm-hmm. There have been people saying, I don't really like the idea of a doctor being a woman. So I can't tell whether there is genuine vile stuff out there, or whether people are just exaggerating, or whether people are just making it up in order to...
I think extreme response like that on social media is always... The problem with social media, and this is what really hacks me off with it sometimes, is that if you're in a conversation with somebody face-to-face, or if you're going to see somebody, you would think of what you're going to say next before you would say it. What social media does is it takes that sort of 3 or 4 seconds that you would normally take in a normal, sort of one-to-one conversation or a group discussion away from you, because, you know, you don't have to do that thought pattern. You can write as you're thinking. It's almost like writing a book. You just go along and it might not be, you know, sort of pre-thought out. Or there have been occasions where I've written stuff online and I've written a whole 4 or 5 paragraphs on someone's status, and then I've just completely deleted the lock.
So I'm always doing that.
Because I've got to the end and I've just thought, God, I sound like such a churlish twat here. I'm going to get rid of it. I do it with texts as well.
Oh, no, I don't do that.
I don't
feel guilty about it. I feel, oh, no, this is just going to get people disliking me, so I'll delete it. I don't actually feel that I'm in any way in the wrong or childish about it.
I actually think, do you know what, looking at it now, and, you know, we've all said, we've had, you know, 54 years of the Doctor being a man and everything, which is, it's been great, and all of the Doctors have all had their qualities and they're all loved by everyone worldwide. So Jodie Whittaker isn't going to be any different there. But what is worrying, I find, is the fact that it sort of seemed this decision, which was going to be taken sooner rather than later, I must say, has seemed to have split fans down the middle. And I know that the media, obviously, you know, have sort of jumped upon this, and a few other people elsewhere as well. But it's just really disappointing, really, to see that something like this, I don't know, would bring so much anger and disappointment out of people for what is essentially a TV show. This isn't Brexit here. This is something, like I said, and a regeneration or two down the line, the Doctor will go back to being a man, probably. This isn't going to be a complete hard set where the next 12 are going to be women. So...
You're quite right, Hayden. This is nowhere near as trivial as Brexit.
No, but the last time online I saw people... Oh, sorry, can I just say quickly that last time I saw people so split down the middle where there were two extremes of people giving their opinions was Brexit. That's why I brought it up. Sorry, go on, Alan.
No, I was actually jumping on that point. Is I heard from Paul Winter and yesterday that according to the Doctor Who Appreciation Society's online poll, Jodie Whittaker is currently polling 57-43 against. So it's in fact slightly less divisive than Brexit because more people are in favour of Jodie than they were of Brexit. Thinking of misogyny, this was raised yesterday, and
that's always a worrying introduction to any sentence, isn't it? Speaking of misogyny.
There has been a certain amount of it online, but there hasn't been nearly as much of it as the accusations would seem to suggest, because as always, with social media, you've got idiots on both sides of the argument making things worse than they need to be.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Not everyone who's said, oh, I'm not particularly in favour of a male doctor, is being misogynist, but nevertheless, they are being accused by people who are being fairly small-minded in their own way, you know, and this does happen. But I had one of the interviews we were doing yesterday. I think it was either Shropshire or Suffolk. I can't remember which, because it's the one I was actually doing at the same time.
When you're doing so many.
Yeah, well, no, I was doing it at the same time as the Sky TV one, which is why you see me with the headphones and shit and why I dive off at the end.
I was going to ask about
Erica,
that.
Yeah, Erica was supposed to be in Sky TV, but she slept in because she was hungover. So I had to do both. I was in the little BBC broom studio doing the... interview. And there was a guy from either Shropshire or Suffolk. They were doing the listeners' phone-in reactions first. And there was a bloke came on and did the whole, oh, I'm telling my lad it's because of PC and we've all got to be equal and he's not getting it. And I'm just going, you know, what happens if the Daleks all get PMT at the same time? And the presenter's laughing along and going, oh, now, careful now. And then when I came on, he said to me, so what do you make of that fan's reaction? And the first thing that came out of my mouth was, well, I didn't live through the 1950s. It's nice to hear they're still going. And there was an audible intake of breath from the presenter. Oh, he's insulted our viewers. And then I went on to kind of say, you know, it's people have grown up with it. It's very close to them and all that bullshit. But, I mean, the guy was just being a prick.
When you were telling us what he was saying in that voice, Alan, I was thinking to myself, so this explains why Tom Spilsbury has been forced to leave Doctor Who magazine.
Oh, now, annoyingly, the reason the only interview I didn't do yesterday was Radio Merseyside is because they booked they booked Tom Spilsbury to do that interview on the phone while I was there. So that was very annoying. Tom Spilsbury.
Yeah. Well, so, what does he even do?
Knock, knock. Who's there? Tom who? That's show business.
That's the Peter Sellers gag, isn't it, when he went on Parkinson? Knock, knock. Who's there? Winston. Winston who? You see, you've forgotten him already.
My concern, I don't want to say I've nothing against women, because...
Because we all know you have, yeah.
You're almost accepting other people's arguments to stoop to that. I think it's almost, to try and bring sexism into it, it's almost trivialising sexism, and I was slightly disappointed that in Jodie Whittaker's main press release interview, she mentioned, I'm supposed to be proud as a feminist. I thought, oh, please, get a sense of proportion.
Yeah, Florence Nightingale was a founding member of the National Organisation for Statistical Modelling. That should make you proud as a feminist, you know.
I thought it was tricky. My objection, and I'll take a bit longer on this because that's I'm the only one who's objecting to it. And it is, I don't like the idea of change, I'll admit that. I do worry about a very big part, since, from the second Doctor onwards, possibly with the only exception of the fifth Doctor, is that that sort of quirky sense of humour he's got is very much a part of his character. I watch Doctor Who as much because I enjoy the Doctor's character than because I enjoy the plots. In fact, probably far more so at times. And that element of being simultaneously silly and deadly serious. Not silly 1 minute, deadly serious the next, but silly and deadly serious at the same time. Childish and powerful simultaneously is very much what sums up the Doctor's character. And I think there's an element of a huge element of that, which is not only a British in nature, but it's male in nature. I think men do have that sort of thing where they're not worried about coming across as a complete Burke. Whereas,
just as well, really.
Yeah. Whereas you get, and this ties in with what Hayden was saying about the other thing. Hayden was saying the other thing I was worrying about was who's writing it. If it's going to be someone who can write a seriously strong and intelligent and empathetic female character, fine. But I just hope it's not going to be people whose idea of gender has been gained from watching a box set of Coupling. The thing that got me down unutterably in the last series was where the Time Lord General gets shot, regenerates into a woman, and the first quip is something whining about, oh, men, you've got such big egos. And you think, oh, Christ. Doctor's just shot someone deliberately just to help himself escape, and that's what they come out with. All this nonsense. And I've suggested before that I sometimes wonder whether Stephen Moffat feels he's got something special to apologise towards womanhood for. I think there's also the sense that when I say a strong woman, I don't mean a powerful woman. I mean a strong character rather than someone who's strong. Now, I've been watching... I mentioned the other day, didn't I, how many of you have seen Firefly?
Yes.
You've got the female characters in Firefly. You have to bear with us on this, Mark. Yeah. The character of Kaylee, the...
heavily oversexed engineer.
Yes, engineer.
Yeah.
Is in a way weak because she, you know, she fancies someone but doesn't have the courage to tell him.
Mm.
The character of River is weak in the sense that she's can't be left alone. She's got to be looked after by her brother all the time.
Mm.
But there's in no sense are they weak characters.
No.
I've said this about the West Wing. I've said this before. The character of CJ in the West Wing. Whenever there's some kind of crisis on, she invariably goes to pieces on the podium in the press room, and she messes a lot of things up. There's no sense, you don't think for a second, oh, she's a weak character. She's just not a powerful character.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing I worry about is that they do... How do they help make Amy seem strong? They put her next to a sort of limp boyfriend. They did that in Blink as well.
They make her a shrew.
Yes, exactly. And the only decent female character I can think of, other than Nancy in Series 1, in The Empty Child, well, that's a child, isn't it, for most of it?
Mm.
The only thing where I can think, that's a really good female character is, she called in Blink?
Oh, Sally Sparrow.
Yeah. But they set her alongside an idiot.
To make her seem stronger, yes.
And as long as they don't do any of that nonsense, because I think it's quite obvious that they're probably going to be casting a male companion
next season,
or likely. I don't mean he has to be a genius on the Doctor's level, but just don't make him some idiot who she'll be constantly sneering at.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. I think it's a valid concern that the writing may be problematic. But it's not really one we can address at this stage because we've been promised a whole spate of new writers. The only person we know of who's definitely going to be writing is Chris Chibnall. To be fair to him, he can't write for men either. So at least they're going to be on an equal footing in that sense. So while I appreciate your concern, but I don't think at this stage there's anything constructive we can say to address it apart from, well, fingers crossed.
Yeah. On the happier side, it's been what now... 2 days, I say, almost 48 hours. Well, exactly 48 hours since it was announced. I've got over it now, really. I've taken the attitude that I'm still not entirely overjoyed, but it's going to happen now, whether I like it or not.
Yeah.
It's best to see. It could be really enjoyable. Then if it's really enjoyable, that'll probably help me to get over how different it is.
Mm.
I think someone said Doctor Who has had a lot of changes before. In a way, you could argue that introducing the idea of regenerating into an entirely new body is almost as big a shock plot device as changing the sex of the Doctor.
I think,
and we got over that.
I think in some ways you could say it's a bigger shock because that has never been done before. Whereas the female Doctor's been built up to quite a bit with, you know, with the Master and with the Corsair mention and that sort of thing. So,
yeah, and Bill's comments in the last episode as well.
Yeah. As you quite astutely pointed out in the last episode. Yeah.
I suspect if I fall in love with her, I won't be that bothered, really. And by the time, let's say, there's another Doctor beyond her, it won't seem that much of a shock. It'll just be, oh, yes, it's always happened, and maybe people will be laughing at her. Wasn't it silly how we were all
terrified,
worried at the time?
Yeah.
Mm. Well, I mean, that's exactly how people must have been back in 1966.
Yeah, no, I think that's the apt comparison, isn't it? The Troughton takeover is, but this will be, I would suggest, with the possible exception of Christopher Eccleston, the actor actress who has the most difficult job her series since Patrick Troughton took over.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because there will be a lot of people wanting her to fail, won't there?
Yeah, absolutely, yes. And as Erica was saying to me yesterday, the great thing about a lot of people who are wanting you to fail is that they will make up a big part of the audience share. There will be people tuning in just to say it.
Her overnight, well, just the viewing figures for that first episode of Series 11, whenever it is, it's going to be humongous.
Yeah.
I have to say that I've never seen anything like it on social media and across all sort of media, in fact, across the news networks, on the radio, on the television. I've never known anything like it in my lifetime regarding Doctor Who. So whatever else, it's certainly pushed the series right into everyone's view, hasn't it?
Mm.
Yeah, into everyone's living rooms, yeah.
And, as a few people were saying to me yesterday, and I was saying as well, a big thing about it, and this links back to what Mark was saying about Eve and, you know, Polly. And I think yesterday morning must have been wonderful for a generation of girls across the country going into the playground to play Doctor Who with their friends and saying, no, today it's my turn to be the Doctor. Yeah. After years of being told they could only be the screening companion, I think that's going to have been a wonderful moment for a lot of people.
That's definitely one of the reasons. I mean, I was probably more on Doc's side of things, even up until relatively recently. Sort of, it's really only in the last year that I've had these discussions with Polly, and that's sort of softened my opinion on it, to be honest.
Mm.
And knowing how much it would mean to her to have a female Doctor, that gradually changed my point of view. And I think I saw a lot of that from people as well, saying my daughters, you know, will be delighted. My, you know, as a father of girls, this is great news.
Mm.
And so my reaction is going to be now, I passionately hope that I will love whatever they do with this new female Doctor, because I think some of us have admitted that we see this, doing this podcasting, partly as therapy. Takes us away from the real world. Mm. And I would hate to actually fall out of love with the show, because then this would stop.
Yeah, but we have been tried over the last few years, haven't we, with some of the episodes, so you know, Cyberbrick, etc., you know, and we're still here.
I think that's the only rational opinion to take, isn't it? If you're not particularly happy with the female Doctor, then nevertheless, the only sane point of view is to say, well, I still hope it's good, because I still want to be able to watch it, and I still want the show to be around for another regeneration, which doubtless will be into a man next time.
It could well be that I find her far less annoying than David Tennant.
Yeah, precisely.
That wouldn't be hard.
I think it would be nice if everybody adopted the battle cry that honorary DWAS president Colin Baker uses whenever he's asked who his favourite Doctor is. He always says the best Doctor is the one who's in harness. You can have a personal favourite from the past, but the best Doctor is always the one who's doing it currently, because they're live and real and fresh and happening. I think that's a very diplomatic answer to a very awkward question, but there's a grain of truth.
I think Tom Baker, when Tom Baker was asked by a fan once, they said, "Oh, who out of all of the Doctors, who's your favourite?" And Tom Baker's reply was, "Other Doctor? Other Doctor?"
I also like Mark in that, although I saw Broadchurch 1, it's only reading a lot of comments, I thought, oh, that's it. Oh, she's her, is she? Mm. I don't really remember her that much, except that she's sitting on the sofa lot of the time crying. And so I'm glad in a way. It's almost like Tom Baker. Unless you saw The Golden Voyage of Sinbad, he was a complete unknown, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Really, which I like. Whereas David Tennant, you sort of knew him. But Christopher Eccleston, you definitely knew who he was.
Yeah, and Peter Capaldi.
Yeah. Mm.
The feeling of excitement and trepidation going hand in hand, I actually haven't felt with the casting of a Doctor since Matt Smith. Jono was only one Doctor away. Well, two announcements ago now. But from what I remember, the David Tennant one was, you know, there wasn't really a big fanfare. It was just in a few newspapers, wasn't it? About a couple of weeks after Christopher Eccleston, the cat had sort of been left out of the bag about his decision. But with every single Doctor that has been cast, I've always thought two things. I hope that they're good, and I hope that the writing's good. And regardless of Jodie Whittaker's sex or what everyone else has been saying, I don't think my viewpoint will ever change. Whoever gets the role, whether it be, could be Jedward for all, you know, whatever happens, no, you know.
I draw the line.
Maybe there I would as well, actually. That's a bad one to use. But I wish her all the best. And I think, yes, you're completely right, Al. Did I just call you Al?
That's fine by me.
Yeah.
I'm not precious.
No, it's not. It's already had one, Al.
That's okay then. I completely agree with Mike when he says that,
the well, Nazi from Remembrance of the Daleks. Thanks a bunch.
What Alan said about, you know, this is the most important changeover since Patrick Troughton. Oh yeah, absolutely. And I hope that she's ready for it. And I hope that she deals with it as well. Because of course, I want this to be a success. Because like Doc said, it brings us together to talk about it, doesn't it? So we'd hate that to end because the show ends. I'm sure it wouldn't, but
we need at least another 19 podcasts to reach that magic 100.
Absolutely.
I actually thought the post-tennis reveal was quite classy, really.
Mm.
Can you imagine if it had been a Zoe Ball on stage interview reveal?
Oh, well, that was ridiculous last time.
Possibly preceded by Rufus Hound, who has now revealed himself to be a bit of a prick. Do you see his comments after the Manchester bomb?
No.
On Twitter?
No.
He was suggesting that it had been faked by the government to help the Tories' election chances. And you think,
wow.
Mm. What a dick.
Nothing to say.
No.
So, anything else been happening? Has anyone been watching anything interesting on television, I wonder?
Oh, well.
Oh, dear. This is where we make our confession to Hayden and Alan. We've been doing things behind your backs.
Oh. Does this have anything to do with those turbans that you're wearing?
Ah.
Yeah. I think they're quite fetching. I thought the decision to black up was perhaps a bit over the top, Mark.
Bloody hell.
Well, you know, it's audio only, but I just felt...
As you're aware, last week I'd have spent, Wednesday and Thursday night editing this podcast up until about midnight or 12:30. And once I'd switched off my computer, as a sort of, a come down? A sort of gentle relaxation.
Yeah.
Mark and I have been watching the DVD box set of The Changes.
Changes.
Now, we didn't invite Hayden because we knew it at 12:30 Sophie would go through the roof if we had him putting the TV on. We didn't invite Alan because he was in another country. And so we were very good, actually, weren't we, Mark? We watched only two episodes a night for 5 nights.
Wow.
Yeah.
We are, of course, referring to the children's drama series from 1975. Tell us about your reactions to it, Mark, which were very entertaining. We were watching this while communicating with each other over Facebook Messenger on our phones.
Yeah.
Yes. Wow!
It was
simultaneous viewing, wasn't it? Yeah, my reactions were, I didn't know what to expect. I'd never really heard of the TV show before. I think I heard Doc mention it once or twice on the podcast in the last year. And there's a chapter dedicated to it in the book that I've mentioned a couple of times called Scarred for Life, all about the dark side of the 70s, which features all the kids' TV and films and books that were around in the 70s that had a bit of a dark tone to them, of which there was a lot. So I'd been given for Father's Day a voucher, an Amazon voucher, and I decided to buy some TV. And Doc said, why not get the changes? So I bought the changes, because I do like a bit of old television, obviously, as a Doctor Who fan.
To be fair, you also bought...
Sapphire and Steel. I'd say I still find it creepy as hell. I don't have very strong memories of it. I just have a memory of being terrified when I was a kid. But anyway, back to the changes. And so I didn't really know what to expect. I knew that it was basically... The basic plot is that there's a noise that makes people smash up technology. I think that was the basic crux of it. So I didn't know what to expect at all. I put it on. And I think in the first 5 minutes, I think I was messaging Doc saying, my God, what the...
Oh, dear.
Yeah, it was absolutely glorious. For a children's programme, I thought, this is really unsettling stuff. That first episode's just bonkers, really. I won't go into too much detail because I don't want to spoil it. If anyone feels they should go and watch it, they really should.
Well, this is the first episode where none other than Chancellor Goth himself.
Ooh.
1 second is relaxing on the sofa while his family eat breakfast, smoking a pipe and reading the paper. And the next second has leapt to his feet and he's smashing his television set to pieces with a hammer.
No, it's with a pedestal ashtray.
With a pedestal ashtray. Pedestal ashtray. Our very 70s.
Yeah. I thought at first it was Bob Holmes because sitting there on his settee with his pipe looking all intense and brooding. Took me about a quarter of an hour into it before I suddenly realised that it was Chancellor Goth. I won't spoil any of the other. The whole series is absolutely littered with alumni from Doctor Who, as you'd expect from 1975 BBC production, I suppose. But I don't think we should go into specifics because there's a couple of them when they turn up. Well, especially for me, because there's a couple of them from some of my favourite stories. And yeah, in fact, I think there's three people from the War Games. Actually,
yes. Isn't
there? And that's one of the delights of watching it is when you suddenly go, oh my God, it's whoever. Particularly when one of them turns up dressed as Avon from Blake 7. Yeah, it was just a treat. Every night watching this story unfold. The music's by Paddy Kingsland, and I adored the music, actually. I think they say it's a bit patchy in the Scarred for Life book,
I didn't notice that. Paddy Kingsland of the BBC Radiophonic Workshop, of course.
Yes, of course.
Yeah. And Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Mm. Mm. I thought the music was brilliant. But I am naturally drawn to that era of television, I think. I do find it comforting. So even though I'm rhapsodising about it, I understand that other people might watch it and they might find it terribly slow in places. It's only 25-minute episodes, isn't it?
The storytelling breathes, doesn't it? I mean, actually, one of the only TV shows that does that right now is Game of Thrones. It doesn't plod as such, but it's got time to unravel several different story arcs and also let the characters develop. And that's very much what I see when I see old TV shows from the 70s and 80s.
What was that quote from Scarred for Life that you had, Doc?
Oh, hang on. It's...
Sapphire and Steel. Erica was a huge fan growing up. And it's actually... I'd never seen it, but she showed it me. It still stands up very well now, I think. But it's infected her general knowledge. If there's a quiz show where it says something like name four chemical elements with four letter names, you know, you should be sat there going, iron, zinc... Steel. But no, steel isn't a chemical element. It's a ferrous carbide alloy. You bloody compound, you stupid. Oh, okay. Sorry, I forgot. Jet. No!
I reckon we got time for another jar or two of ale, lads.
Oh, yes, that's great. That is a suit. There's this moment where there's a huge, hectic chase. There's I won't go into too much details, but there's these people trying to get away from a band of essentially.
This is the Witchfinder General,
yes,
isn't it?
Yeah, there's one of the characters is just like Paul Dacre, I mean, the Witchfinder General. And they're chasing across the countryside to catch these couple of people who they're accused of witchcraft. But they stop off at this pub and go, you know, even during the most hectic, intense chase of the whole series, they still have time to stop and have a couple of pints, which is lovely. I was actually thinking the quote that you put from the Scarred for Life book.
Oh, manages to create tension and urgency out of virtually nothing.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, that does sum it up very well, doesn't it?
That was great fun yesterday. Occasionally people would read out the Daily Mail and Express headlines to me and I would get to have a little pop at them, which was nice. So, oh, the Express says, is telly too politically correct nowadays? And I'd just say, well, we don't expect anything better from them, do we?
Brilliant.
Yeah, anyway, the reason why we're wearing turbans is because very early on, the main protagonist, a girl who's supposed to be about 15 and has become separated from her parents, befriends a group of Sikhs who are fleeing the city. And I have to say, they're just about the coolest gang I've ever seen in television. If I was a kid, I would have definitely watched that. I would have definitely wanted a turban and a big stick for Christmas.
I know what to get you this year then, mate.
I think the representation of the Sikhs is great as well, isn't it? It's just no... I mean, especially considering this was the era of the 70s when television was still did have a lot of racism on it. I mean, it had a lot of, you know, think of Love Thy Neighbour and Curry and Chips.
I was just going to say, about the sort of time Curry and Chips was being...
No, this was after. No, I think Curry and Chips was quite early in the... I think Curry and Chips was 69-70, actually.
Was it really?
Yeah, I think it was. So attitudes towards Asians, what's the word?
Well, it would have been pretty crappy at the time.
Yeah, exactly. So this was really incredibly progressive piece of television, wasn't it? I think.
Oh, you know, if you're talking the mid-70s, you're talking about Pakistanis in London having their windows put in by the National Front.
Mm.
You know, it's a really unpleasant time in British history to be British Asian.
And if that wasn't bad enough, you could just switch on the TV and see sitcoms where one character is referring to his black neighbour as, I don't know if you can say the word nignog on the podcast, making jokes about the jungle. It was really quite appalling, wasn't it?
Yeah, dreadful stuff.
Are we talking about Rising Damp here?
No, I'm talking about things like Love Thy Neighbour. Yeah. What's it called?
Mind Your Language?
No. No, wasn't Love Thy Neighbour the one with Sid James in?
No, was Bless This House, wasn't it?
Yes, yeah. That was it.
No, because I was always going to say it was always my kind of reading of Rising Damp that the joke was on Rigsby.
Oh, on Rigsby, yeah. Oh, Alan was the coolest one in it. Was it Alan? Was it Alan?
I thought Alan was the other chap, actually. Richard Beckinsale.
Yeah, that's...
Philip.
Philip, yes, that Philip. Was it. Yeah, Don Henderson, yes. Who was...
With a cut glass... English accent.
Yes, and everybody, Rigsby was so racist that he assumed he must be some sort of African prince, because that's the only way he could have spoken like that, yeah. Bob Hoskins used to tell a story of walking into a pub in London, and it was, no, I'll tell you what it was a golf club in London, and everybody, he went in with Don Warrington, and everybody turned and looked. And then Don Warrington went up to the bar and he ordered a drink. And the moment he opened his mouth, everybody relaxed. And then Bob Hoskins asked for a pint and they both got thrown out.
Yeah, but I've often said this, and I've always hoped it doesn't sound patronising, but I learned to think from a very early age that there's something strangely cool about Sikhs. Now, I'm not suggesting that anyone didn't have a turban, but just from another country, I didn't trust them. And for a while, I thought, I wonder how this... And I saw the changes again ages ago. Oh, God, that's it.
Yeah.
They are incredibly cool.
I can see why, yeah.
That's some fabulous fighting scenes.
Yes.
Well, I mean, I don't think the health and safety existed when this film was gone. They've got, what's the name of the Sergeant Major from the second Dirty Dozen film? Big guy with a craggy...
Jack Watson.
He's running, you know that thing in the Autons, where you got the Auton going full pelt down the side of a cliff? Over and over, and then it stands up as soon as it gets to the bottom.
Yeah.
It stands at the top of a really, really steep hillside, sort of thing they're all cheeses down in the West Country. He just runs all the way down it.
Yeah. He nearly goes over, doesn't he?
Yeah, there's no...
And the 17-year-old girl, actress who plays the 15-year-old, she was genuinely jumping off boats into rivers and things and nearly drowned at one point. She went, she basically gone under for the third time before they managed to drag her out of the water. And she did all her own stunts, falling off carts and things. And,
awesome.
But it manages to be creepy and scary and as absorbing as hell.
Mm.
Without the main character, this effectively the schoolgirl, being a pain in the ass.
Yeah. Oh, wow. That's some good going.
Yeah.
So we would urge everyone to watch The Changes.
Definitely.
Because it is... I mean, this is the sort of kids' TV that might have been, what, around about 11 or 12 when this was broadcast? No, it wouldn't. It would have been 9.
Yeah.
This is the sort of thing that was broadcast when I was a kid. I used to scare the willies out of us.
Something which children's TV doesn't really do anymore. I mean, I think the last TV show I watched that was quite sort of, not quite terrifying, that's terrible English, but was The Demon Headmaster.
Ah!
Which was so scary that some kids in my class, I seem to remember, were not allowed to watch it. Same with the Goosebumps books. And when Goosebumps went to television, it was very much, you know, something else that people weren't allowed to watch.
Ooh.
I think in that clip from the comedian Stuart Lee commenting on how teenagers were shown in the 70s and how they're shown now, he mentions that in...
It's interesting looking at the different challenges that face the children in these programmes. In The Changes, for example, Nikki has to find her way alone through a Britain that is in a kind of apocalyptic meltdown. And in Skins, Sid has to go and try and get some dope from a dope dealer in a brothel so that he can get a girl so catastrophically spliffed up that she'll have sex with him without realising who he is. I'm really glad I'm not a teenager watching TV for teenagers now, because I would feel really left out by something like Skins. But there's something really comforting for, like, nerds and weirdos about things like Children of the Stones and The Changes, things that make you feel less alone. And that's a really great thing that art can do, whereas I think something like Skins would make me, as a teenager, feel more alone.
What have we lost?
I love that Stuart Lee. I'll show you the clip, surely.
That's from Charlie Brooker's Screen Wipe. That's where I've heard from. That's where I've heard The Changes, because, yes, he talks about Children of the Stones as well, doesn't he, on that clip?
Yeah. I think that might have to be our next one, Doc.
Love a bit of Stuart Lee. Did you see any of his TV series, Stuart Lee? Yes.
Comedy vehicle.
Yeah, Stuart Lee's Comedy Vehicle.
Yes.
There's that wonderful moment in the very first episode, which is about books.
Oh.
Yeah, and it's actually a line he borrowed with permission from Simon Munnery, but where he turns the camera and he says...
Tonight we're going to be talking about books. Now, if you've only ever read one book in your life, I highly recommend you keep your mouth shut.
He's one of those people that, because his comedy tends to be, shall we say, caustically derisive of various things. But like Charlie Brooker, I think you assume, he would, if I ever met him, he would think that I was incredibly uncool and he'd be contemptuous of me. But then you see something like Stuart Lee saying this about teenagers, and you see Charlie Brooker's beautiful tribute to Oliver Postgate.
Oh, that's lovely, isn't it?
And you think, they must be quite cool.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think it was in the series 2 of Doctor Who, Charlie Brooker was saying Doctor Who just plugs directly into the inner child in my brain.
Ooh.
But you know, he was moaning about things like...
Now let's get something straight, okay? I love Doctor Who. It somehow bypasses the cynical, nasty, gnarled bit of my brain completely and plugs straight into my gurgling, overgrown child. But nothing's perfect, so while Series 2 is still fresh in our minds, let's compile a little wish list for Series 3, starting with wish number 1. Next time round, less gurning. And by gurning, I mean this.
Who are you gonna call?
Ghostbusters!
I ain't afraid of no ghosts!
All right, less of that. I know Doctor Who has always been an eccentric, and fair enough, Tom Baker used to play him as the sort of man you wouldn't want
right.
to... Well, you wouldn't have to use a bath towel after him.
Touch one wire against the other.
But poor old David Tennant, who I think is great in all other respects, seems to have been encouraged to ramp up the goofiness until he becomes perilously close to being one of those archetypal, annoying, wacky characters from a bad US sitcom.
God, they know how to party!
I don't want Doctor Who bumming around like he's in a bad Tiswas tribute, OK? I want him being brooding and serious.
Hold on.
Wish number two, be less knowing, because occasionally, this series, the Doctor has behaved like a bit of a, oh, I've seen it all before, sort of arse.
Ah! Oh! Oh, it's space!
Oh, it's a sanctuary base!
Anyway, my final wish is a very simple one. Stop messing up the end credits.
A marriage made in... Well, you'll have to wait 170 days to find out. Doctor Who returns to BBC One with The Runaway Bride at Christmas.
Oh, what is the point of getting an orchestra to record a great version of the Doctor Who theme tune and then getting someone in to jabber all over the top of it? Talk about putting the f*** into continuity. Let's see how they like it if I talk all over them.
Time is up. Doomsday
has arrived.
This
is really good
show,
come on.
But is it goodbye?
Anyway, that's what I'd like to see from the next series of Doctor Who.
I thought of both. Someone I can identify with, the one who agrees with me. Something else I've been watching has been Killjoys.
Film of your autobiography, Doc?
On the side. No, I've just... in about a weekend, I got through two series of it. Admittedly, there's only 10 episodes each on the Sci-Fi channel. And it's quite good. It's very, initially, very Firefly. It's obviously they're copying ideas directly off it, but otherwise it's, and apart from the fact that some of the plot goes over your head, it's well worth a watch, I would say.
To be fair, Firefly isn't a hugely original proposition. The whole point of Firefly is that it's the continuing adventures of Han Solo.
Well, there's an interview with Paul Darrow on the DVD box set of Series 4 at Blake 7, where they're saying to him, oh, do you think Blake 7 should ever be revived? And he says, oh, it already has been, hasn't it? Have you not seen Firefly? Now, the reason I mention this ties into what I was saying about Jodie Whittaker, is that the lead actress on this is a sort of kick-ass bounty hunter who's very nice, but she's not a very good actress. Either that, or she's got this terribly, terribly cut-glass English accent, which you can tell, because she occasionally fails, that it is put on. And you wonder, is this a bit like Ewan McGregor trying to do Obi-Wan Kenobi? Which I found completely rubbish, because all his acting ability was hidden behind this painful accent he was having to put on.
I've got a slightly better parator for that, which is Uma Thurman as Diana Rigg in the Avengers film.
You mean, yeah.
Where all of her acting is maintaining the British accent and she can't do anything else while she's doing it.
And the point I was making with Jodie Whittaker is the fact that what one of you was saying is, which was you, Hayden, saying, in the end, I just hope they choose a really good actor/actress for it.
It was Hayden, yes. And quite right.
And as long as that happens, I'll be...
like a clam in brine.
Alan, you took the words right out of my mouth. It must be when you were kissing me. I'll be relieved. Anyone else been doing anything?
I've been watching two US animation shows recently. Rick and Morty and Archer. I don't know whether either of you have been watching. Well, if any of you have been watching it.
Archer's an Adult Swim thing, isn't it? I watched a lot of their more juvenile stuff when I was younger. Space Ghost Coast to Coast and Harvey Birdman Attorney at Law and that sort of thing. C-Lab 2021, which is glorious. Sorry, carry on.
It's been quite nice, actually, because, obviously with Doctor Who over... The great thing about something like Netflix is that you can just watch all these shows back to back. And, it reminds me of the days when I was 10 years old watching The Simpsons. And if I wanted to watch The Simpsons, I either had to watch it at 6 o'clock on BBC Two, or I'd have to save up and every once in a while buy a compilation video with only 4 episodes on it. So it's quite... It just shows just how far we've sort of come in that time. But both of them, I think Rick and Morty owes a bit to Doctor Who, but I don't know whether any of you have watched it.
No.
So, no, very good, very clever, very clever, very funny. It's an Adult Swim, make it in the US. Really, really good. And Archer is in its 8th season now, I think. And yeah, if you can imagine sort of, I once had it described to me as if James Bond had been brought up by Charlie Sheen, then he would have been Sterling Archer. And that's actually a very apt description of the programme. So
good British name.
Exactly. even though he's an American. But but yeah, I heartily recommend those.
I've also finally managed to get halfway through the first series of Babylon 5, which I'm not quite sure. I'm not entirely sure how I'm going to react to that. But
wasting we'll your see. Life, mate. What we watch Battlestar Galactica instead.
Which one?
Oh, the good one, the new one.
Battle Noir Galactica, you mean?
That was an excellent point made by somebody on social media, actually. They had a picture of the two Starbucks, and they said, if you're worried about Doctor Who changing sex, be aware it's worked once already.
Yeah, but it's worked once on a show I don't care about. It's worked once on a show I don't devote about half of my life to producing a podcast on. And so, Hayden.
Don't throw bodies into the river.
Uncle Terence, we have enemy ships in Sector 27.
It's a trap.
Bye-bye, everyone.
Goodbye.
See ya.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye. Been listening to the Diddly Dum podcast. Find us on our blog at diddlydumpodcast.wordpress.com, on iTunes, Facebook, Audioboo, and Stitcher.com at Diddly Dum, on Twitter at diddly_dum, or email us at diddlydumpodcast@yahoo.co.uk. Diddly Dum. The empty space that circles time.